Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and you're going to be hearing a lot of background noise because we are here at the Green Festival in San Francisco. And I just ran into Hazel Henderson, who I haven't seen for a long time, who's a very exciting thinker and writer. And I'm just going to learn about what you're doing, Hazel, as you tell the world about it. I know that your very latest book is called Beyond Globalization, Shaping a Sustainable Global Economy. And before that was Building a Win-Win World. And before that and before that, you've written a lot of books and been doing a lot of things and traveling and involved in the global movement for a better world for a long time. So bring us up to date.
Well, it was so nice to run into you, Sue, particularly at this venue. Isn't it great?
It really is.
It's just wonderful. So for me, it feels like old home week. And I'm doing much more of now, is going around the world where my books have been translated into, local languages. And I have a column for Interpress Service, which comes out of Rome, Italy, which goes to 400 newspapers in 27 languages, but is not seen in the U.S.
And that's a really pretty progressive, I don't know what you call it, news service that we don't get in the U.S., the one out of Italy, right?
They're very, very good. And so for me, that's really been wonderful, And so
And you live in Florida, I should say, even though you're from England, right?
Yes. And actually, I can fly out of Orlando nonstop to all these places because of Disney, so it makes it a very convenient place to live. But I think that, what's been happening to me is that I've turned into what I'm calling a sort of global acupuncturist, I'm always scanning, what's happening in the globalization process, and, that's what I've been writing about, that we have a very weird kind of globalization, the globalization of the marketplace and the globalization of technology, largely driven by the USA.
It's corporate globalization, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, there's this discussion that goes on between that corporate globalization that's represented by Davos, Switzerland, the new economic, the World Economic Forum, and the new forms of globalizing human rights, globalizing good social policy, globalizing environmental protection, and globalizing good workplace standards. And that's the globalization that I'm interested in and most of the people here are. And that's coming out of Porto Alegre, Brazil, and it's called the World Social Forum. And they have this wonderful slogan, "Another World is Possible." And, of course, that's what I've been hoping and praying for all my life, And I never expected to see all of this activity in my lifetime. And so, it's pretty amazing. So here I am, I'm going down to Brazil next week, and I'm going to meet with the new president-elect, President Lula da Silva's top economic and business advisors. And then I'm going on to Porto Alegre. You see, all my books have been translated into Portuguese, and I've been teaching in a Brazilian management institute for the last 5 years, on and off. And so I'm going to give a public lecture in Porto Alegre. And you see, this whole regime change thing, it's great, You see a regime change like what just happened in Brazil. And I have my last editorial, which is on my website. Everything's on my website. It's www.hazelhenderson.com. and that's all one word, hazelhenderson.com. Just very easy to remember. And my last editorial was called Wanted Regime Change in the USA. And I just got back from Prague, the Czech Republic, where I've been an advisor to President Václav Havel for the past 5 years on his conversations about globalization, which he's been holding in Prague Castle. And it was so great to be there with all my friends in Prague. And that editorial was all over the place, and people were coming up and hugging me. Because, you know, it's kind of embarrassing to be an American citizen right now in other parts of the world. Like, you know, you saw this huge demonstration in Florence, Italy, and another huge demonstration in Japan.
What was that, like almost a million people or something like that just yesterday? And I don't think it was in the American press.
No. I mean, our newspapers are all in denial, you know, and our media is so corporately controlled.
Just think of that, folks. I mean, that's a major demonstration, almost a million people against the war, and we don't hear about it. I mean, we are lucky to have things like the indie media, like Hazel Henderson.
Well, but even so, and you know, what you've been doing all these years, Sue, which, you know, I mean, it is an unbelievably shocking thing that we have what I call commercial censorship in the U.S. In other words, whatever the commercial sponsors and owners of the mass media don't want the American people to hear, or whatever they think won't sell their product, we don't hear about it, you know. And so, what do I mean by being a global acupuncturist? Well, to give you an example, the Secretary General of the UN announced in 1999 in Davos, Switzerland, at the World Economic Forum, this new thing he calls the UN Global Compact, and it's 9 principles of corporate and social responsibility in the area of environment, human rights, and workplace standards. And so a whole bunch of companies, about 200 of them, sort of stepped up to the plate and signed this thing. And I feel very sorry for the UN because they begin to cozy up to companies because our country has owed $1.3 billion of back UN dues. And so we tend to put a huge dent in their budget. And so they, you know, try to figure out how they're going to, you know, operate. And so what I did was I introduced my colleagues at the Calvert Group, our CEO, to the Secretary General and the Global Compact, and suggested that she should donate Calvert services, you know, to do the social and environmental screening and auditing of these companies. And so anyway, it's been very exciting because we had a meeting at the UN, and all the other UN agency representatives came, like UNICEF and UNDP and UNOPS. And so as a result of all of this, our CEO, Barbara Krumsik, now serves on an advisory council to the Secretary General on the Global Compact. Calvert is donating its services not only to the UN Global Compact, but to all these other UN agencies. And Calvert now has a contract to do this work for the World Bank. So what it means really is finally we've got some real measure of accountability, you know, in this system.
Well, I mean, don't they take money from oil companies and stuff, the UN, these days?
No, they don't, no. But so what we're trying to do, you see, is to sort of raise the bar and say there must be a way of only signing up the very best companies, the ones that go through the Calvert screens and the social screens and all that, and that we can help them evaluate these companies so they don't make egregious mistakes. And then the next thing, of course, is to figure out a procedure whereby if a company is just greenwashing itself, that we can bump them off. And, of course, that will come a little later because these things grind rather slowly. But to me, that's kind of an acupuncture point, you see, where you leverage, because the UN, does about $1 billion worth of business a year, you know, and contracting, and of course the World Bank does a lot more. So now those companies are going to have to really think twice. You know, they're not going to get automatically approved unless they go through these kind of screens, social, environmental screens. So another thing I've been doing, I have been down in Venezuela a lot, and as you know, our country has been, not our country, this administration has been very opposed to the administration of President Hugo Chavez, who I have met several times, and I went down there when he first got elected because a friend of mine had written a book called Petroleum and Globalization, Salvation or Perdition. And President Chavez read it and asked my friend, oh, will you chair a conference of world experts on trends in global energy, not oil, energy. And as you know, Venezuela is the leader of OPEC. It was their idea, you know. And so I helped my friend put together this conference, and President Chavez took our recommendations to the OPEC summit, which took place in Caracas in the year 2000. And what we recommended was that OPEC should develop a solar energy fund of their own to begin work on hydrogen and wind power and renewables, just the same way the oil majors are doing, like BP and Shell, and that they should begin to barter their oil so that developing countries wouldn't have to earn dollars in order to buy OPEC oil. You know, and a lot of these countries have a lot of commodities that they can't sell, you know, because the terms of trade get worse and worse all the time. So it would be much more efficient to find some countries and do barter deals with them. So President Chavez, who is a really quick study, he's an indigenous and very, very bright, intelligent man, he pretty much turned around and signed 13 bilateral barter deals with other developing countries. And the one that the U.S. government got really mad about was the one that he did with his friend Fidel. And that was to barter Venezuelan oil for Cuban doctors and paramedics who are going all over rural Brazil setting up health clinics, you know? And of course, we have the idea that, you know, economists think that barter is primitive, but we all know barter, under the circumstances we're living in today with this very dysfunctional global casino, that barter is extremely efficient. So that was another kind of little acupuncture point. And what I was talking about today was that the real vulnerabilities of the U.S. society right now are not really terrorism, except, of course, if Bush goes and makes a war in Iraq, then we really better watch out, because we are going to be in the crosshairs, you know, from a lot of terrorism that we will have, you know, have started ourselves by going into Iraq. And so the real vulnerability to me is the economy. And I listened to the news today, and there was a poll that said that now twice as many Americans, just a week after the election, twice as many Americans are worried about the U.S. economy as worried about terrorism. And it was Bush swamping the airwaves and all of that with all this fear that I think stampeded the American people. But, you know, what I look at is the fact that we are still so dependent on oil. It drives our foreign policy. And we are in a situation now that, now, suppose you were a Japanese investor, you know, Mrs. Tanaka, you know, and you've got money in U.S. treasuries, as a lot of Japanese investors do. And you see the U.S. economy right now, and you see that we've gone from a surplus to deficits as far as the eye can see. We have a president running around the world declaring war on evil, you know, and terrorism. And my God, you know, even his top advisor says, oh, well, it'll only cost between 100 and 200 billion, this war in Iraq, and that's, quote, manageable. That was his quote. But what he doesn't seem to remember is that in the war, in the Gulf War, we got the British, the French, the Germans, and the Japanese to pay the bill. We did not pay the bill for the Gulf War. So we're going to have to pay that whole $200 billion because, you know, we don't have any allies for this one, and the Brits are not going to pay for it.
And I want to say that I learned that most of the 65% of the oil we use, which is not, that doesn't mean it's okay for us to be driving cars and using oil all that we do, but that 65% of the oil we use is used basically to make more war. So there's war to make more war, to get oil to make more war.
You know, the thing that is really shocking to me is that I think the idea is to force the Iraqis to pay for the demolition of their society and the reconstruction of their society with their own oil. You know, that we're going to kind of commandeer that oil and they're going to have to pay for it. I mean, you know, it's the most unbelievable thing you ever heard of.
And yet, only certain people make money out of this.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that the American people really have to sort of come out of denial about what's wrong with our politics. And right after that disastrous 2000 election in Florida, particularly, it's very embarrassing to be from Florida, I wrote an editorial, which you'll find on my website, called Democracy Lessons for the USA. And I was trying to point out that all other major democracies in Europe or Canada, they have a six-week election cycle. They have multiple parties, not just two at loggerheads with each other, but multiple parties, which means that all the issues get into play, because there's always some small party who'll take up any issue, and that you can't form a government without forming a coalition. And you have proportional representation, so that, you know, a very small Green Party in Germany, with only about 7% of the vote, you know, holds the balance of power for the whole country, and they have a green foreign minister. And so, by contrast, we in the U.S. have two minority parties, the Republicans and the Democrats, which each hold about 30% of the voters.
And not that many people vote.
And the other 40% are simply not represented in the United States Congress. We get a few independents elected at the local level. But until people understand in other countries that we have these two major parties who are like two football teams owned by the same owners, you know, they get the same money. And I was with Robert Reich in Prague a couple of weeks ago at President Havel's conference on globalization. And I asked him, well, why do you think that the Democrats rolled over and played dead, you know, and passed this authorization for Bush? I said, I have my own ideas I'm going to tell you in a minute, you know, but what do you think? And he said, oh, well, you know, when you have to even get into play. And so what I expect will happen is we have more and more complete issues of the issues that never even get into play. And so what I expect will happen is we have more and more completely the issue research. We convert, we'll use the policy to convert, you know, when. And he said, oh, well, you know, when you have two competing parties, they're going to converge in the middle, you see, on these kind of on their policies. And I'm saying, well, the problem is that they all use the same spin masters, they get the money from the same place, and so they converge into the middle with the same kind of polls and market research on one or two trivial issues, and the rest of the issues that never even get into play. And so what I expect will happen is we have more and more completely dead heat elections until we get a third party, you know, a fourth and fifth party. And so I think we could very see a sort of, you know, is it electoral crisis, you know?
Well, there is an electoral crisis in terms of there's so much corruption. I just saw this film, Unprecedented, and I guess, and I've interviewed Greg Palast, and there's all this, you know, really hard evidence. There's no question that all these people were thrown, like almost a million people were thrown off the voter rolls in Florida so the Democrats couldn't vote. Yeah. But I want to be sure that the listeners know that you're hearing from Hazel Henderson. Hazel Henderson has been working globally for many, many years and is a writer. Two of her latest books are Building a Win-Win World, and the latest one is Beyond Globalization, Shaping a Sustainable Global Economy.
You can get them at Cody's bookstore in Berkeley.
Yeah. Well, there's people all over the world hearing this. So, and your website is www.hazelhenderson.com, and you can get a lot more information there. And it's very loud here because we are at the Green Festival in San Francisco, and we just ran into each other walking around here. Hazel's just given a talk, which I missed, and but I know you're always doing such great things, going all around the world with your really independent economic thinking. And I remember the last time I saw you, Hazel, I mean, always when I'd interviewed you, which has been some years now, you were always so kind of positive about the future. And I remember you talking about how people are going to be dancing and there's going to be all this music. And that's all very much part of my life in Berkeley. I don't know if it's part of people's lives all over the world, but a lot of really terrible things are happening, that's for sure. And it's a very, very scary what's happening to the planet.
Good things happening too. You know, like the Earth Charter is really taking off. You know, people can go to www.earthcharter.org and see, you know, there's all these cities and municipalities assigning the Earth Charter. And if anyone wants to look for my alternative to the GNP, it's on the web, and it's the Calvert Henderson Quality of Life Indicators, and they can just go on www.calvert-henderson, that's me, .com, and click on the forward, which is my updates for that are up to date. And this is kind of an alternative look at the U.S. economy.
Do you want to explain what that is?
Yeah, I mean, we have all of these different aspects of quality of life which kind of get left off the numbers. You know, the real situation in education and health and human rights and environment. And all of that data is just as important as whether the stock market is going up or whether the GNP is going up.
Probably more important to most people on a daily basis.
It really is. And so, you know, this gives a way for people to really make those trade-offs in their own life between whether they want to get more money income and stay in the rat race, or whether they want to go to a more different kind of community and, and go on to the quality of life standard. And if you go on my website, I've got some articles I wrote in Japan, which, of course, they are in English. But this was about a year ago, telling my Japanese friends, hey, don't let those American economists come and tell you that your economy is in a mess and all the rest of it. You've got, they've got a lot of debt in the Japanese economy, but the reason it looks so terrible is that the GNP doesn't have an asset budget, so it doesn't balance off those debts. By counting all of those wonderful, very long-lived assets that were purchased with those bonds, those public bonds, you know, like the bullet trains and universities and 100% literacy. And, you know, Japan is really a very wonderful, organized society. And so I'm saying just put an asset side on the budget and then declare victory and then say that Japan now has sufficient materially and we're now shifting to the quality of life indicators where we can grow by developing human development, community development, cleaning up the environment, and spiritual growth. And to my amazement, there are now Henderson clubs all over Japan, and they're talking about smart, green, spiritual growth. And so, you know, we are beginning to dematerialize the GNP, you know, and so that is beginning to happen. But, you know, our country now is the laggard. The Europeans are way ahead of us. And my other big win, really, is the work I've been doing in China. I've been going to China for many, many, since 1986. And I always told my Chinese friends, you know, about socially responsible investing, about green technologies, and about the fact that they didn't have to copy these two European ideologies of economic development, Marxism, the old, you know, Chinese went to the Moscow State U, you know, and learned all about Marxism and communism, and capitalism, market fundamentalism, you know, that we teach here. And I used to say, look, those are both European Western ideologies. And, you know, surely this is a 6,000-year-old culture. And you gave the world Taoism and Confucianism and all that. And I'm sure that it would be better to build an economic development model on your own culture, you know. And so I got a call from Shanghai a couple of days ago. And the new mayor of Shanghai is going to hold a conference in May on the subject of social responsibility of corporations and governments. And I'm being invited to give a keynote speech. And they're going now in the direction of very explicitly saying that they're going to have an economy based on the teachings of Confucius.
Really? Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And you made that impact. I mean,
I'm just so excited. Yeah. And that also the city of Shanghai is adapting indicators, my quality of life indicators. So, you see, my cup runneth over, Sue.
Right. Well, that's wonderful. And it's also another indication of how much difference one person can make. I mean, and one person can be any of us. I mean, you're a real special person. But, you know, we all have our special talents, so that's impressive in itself. And that's really good news. One of the I was at the Asian Development Bank resistance meeting in Hawaii a little over a year ago. And one of the things that I learned that was new for me was when this a guy from Laos, or I think for Laos, somewhere in Southeast Asia, Laos, said, you know, they came along and said we were poor. The World Bank came along, or whoever it was, and said that we were poor. We didn't know that we were poor. We didn't have money, but we had this, you know, a life that was working very well. And they, you know, then said we were poor, and then we know the rest of the story.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so definitions.
Yes, this whole Washington consensus, one size fits all, kind of economic development is really dead, you know. And what excites me is even some of the big shots in the economics profession, you know, who have promoted this all over the world. People like Joseph Stiglitz, you know, and Jeffrey Sachs are all now turning around, you know, and saying, no, it was wrong, it didn't work. You know, we need that to clarify the system. And, you know, I was with Jeffrey Sachs in Prague for the last couple of years at these meetings of Havel's. And he's now president of the Earth Institute at Columbia University, and he works with WHO, World Health Organization. And, you know, I was talking to him at this cocktail party, and, of course, he sounds like me now. And so he said, well, Hazel, you know, you've won.
Well, Hazel Henderson, it's so great that you can stay so positive, are staying and doing this wonderful, positive global work. And I want to tell people again that you're hearing all this background sound because we are in the Green Festival, which is in itself very positive. Lots of positive information, positive commerce, speakers. There was a great dance last night. And I think they're having these all over the place, actually. So if you want to know more about what Hazel Henderson has to say, you can go to her website, and there's a lot at www.hazelhenderson.com, and you can get her book, Beyond Globalization, Shaping a Sustainable Global Economy. I'm sorry we don't have more time to talk, but I'm glad we got to talk at all.
Thank you very much, Sue. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much to Hazel Henderson, and my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.